keepers of the scroll and the recording angels for access to the higher teachings on the yellow rays, so we can bring these forth for our fellow man. We ask for those who we ask the beloved Maha Chohan and those who work with the Holy Spirit to help us, to give us the gift of discernment, to help us to lower into the physical octave the discrimination to know how and where and why and when the Spirit should move us through us to touch a heart or a mind here and there. We ask for help, beloved Maitri, in creating this team of researchers that you have in mind for bringing forth the yellow ray and bonding together and working in harmony to create for this activity the means whereby we may deliver teaching upon teaching, principle upon principle. We ask that we all move forward now as servitors of fire and presenters to the world of the true nature of the secret ray activity of the heart center, which we are building together brick by brick, heart by heart, flame by heart. We are so grateful, beloved Maitreya, for your fiery spirit of God victory this day, and we ask for each one of us to be inspired to come and to learn and to employ what we have learned from you and in this outer teaching to bring forth the highest release of light to our fellow sons and daughters on this planet. Thank you. Amen. Okay. We're going to start out with the first concept of St. Germain's alchemy, six steps of alchemy, which is to create. And as the light calls a body, we are given the mandate by God to create. That's the fiat that comes forth from our almighty I Am Presence. So this matrix that I'm going to share with you, and Anita will share with you, these matrices are to assist you in being able to create the chalice or the bowl to contain the light of your almighty I Am Presence as it flows out to help in the education process. So, first thing we're going to do is we're going to go through the syllabus together, and I'm going to ask you to not just think about it in terms of what's happening in this class for the next four Monday nights, but to ask you to think about it as a matrix for what you're going to be creating. And if you are new to the idea of teaching, and the whole course seems very daunting and much more than you could comprehend, think about this same syllabus as being the framework that you could hang a workshop presentation on, or even an informal talk with people gathered in your home, in your living room. So, first of all, there would be a time, and there would be a date, and there would be a location. And that's when you create your syllabus, what you're going to determine is a date, a time, and a location. So if you don't have one, you just make it up in your mind so that you're actually targeting a specific time, a specific location that you might be giving this syllabus, this class, and you know, a specific group of people that you have in mind when you're creating it. So try to be very specific. It may not be what actually happens in real life, but for the sake of this alchemy, you need to be as specific as you can in your mind. So that's the first thing. Then you're going to have a text. Now, in our case, we have this packet of information. You may have a single sheet of a handout, or you may not have any handout at all. You might have a product that you're trying to promote. If there would be something that you would share with other people in the form of a paper or maybe even an internet site, you would put that information there or text. And then, of course, you put your own name under instructor. So in this case, the two of us are listed here. My email address should be corrected to read C. Miller at NT Miller. And then the second one you can use is cmiller@heartcenter.org. which got created after this syllabus was put together. So you can email me at Care of the Heart Center and I'll get it. And then Anita's is accurate to my knowledge. Okay, then you're going to put down the purpose of your course or the purpose of your workshop or the purpose of whatever it is that you're trying to put together here. And that should be a general statement which just states what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And so that people would know that this was what level this class would be offered at. And then I also wrote at the bottom line, there are no course prerequisites, because sometimes there are prerequisites for classes, and you might want to distinguish that. So then the next section is the general objectives, and those come out of the purpose of the course, and in this case I've identified six. And if you'll look at the first words, you'll want to be thinking about whether you want the person who's taking the class to understand the concept or to demonstrate something in the class. And you probably should have a couple of demonstrations so that you know that they can actually use this information in a practical, hands-on way. Because just to understand it doesn't necessarily imply that it's gotten used. I can understand how to ride a bike from learning about what a bike is like, but if I demonstrate that I learned to ride a bike, then obviously I've applied what I learned in the understanding. So in this class, we're going to understand the difference between the scope and sequence, what those two words mean and how to use them, understand the difference between a rubric and a concept map and when to use them, understand several teaching strategies and be able to apply them to design your course. And here's demonstrate the ability to prepare a syllabus. You're going to demonstrate it because you're actually going to create one. Demonstrate the ability to deliver curriculum to adult learners, because some of you, hopefully all of you, if we have time, will be able to have a five-minute chance to speak. And then the sixth one is to understand the spiritual preparation for teaching. Then we go on to our course outline. And this is where, so generally, the general objectives is the scope of what we are going to be teaching during this class. And then we're sequence part, which is the order that it's going to be taught and what it's going to be taught. So there's four classes laid out by dates, and then what we're going to cover in each class is listed under the dates. So you would do the same, and you will be, if you're going to be planning a class for Meru University, you want to have six nights, one and a half hours each night. And if you're doing a workshop, then you would have a two-hour workshop or a three-hour workshop or all-day workshop, whatever you have in mind. You would design your syllabus based on the amount of time that you are going to be needing. Are there any questions so far? For Meru University, you will have some assignments. If you're having a workshop, you probably wouldn't have assignments unless they're coming back the next day for additional information. So in this class, we have six assignments. Now, the first is going to be done during our time on the telephone. The second one will be done in your home, which is the syllabus. And the third one will be done in class. The fourth one is information about the syllabus, so it relates back to the second one. The fifth one goes with the second and the fourth, and then the sixth one is in class. So of these six assignments, three are done in class and three are done at home, so these are not all homework assignments. So I know some of you may think this is a lot of work, but it won't be as much work as you think. Okay, so then if you look on page three, there's the formal assessment, and then there's an informal assessment. The informal assessment is the course evaluation. It's informal because we could score it, but I'm not going to be scoring it, so I'm calling it informal. Formal assessments are something that you can actually connect numbers to and actually use to evaluate yourself in a very specific and very concrete way. And we'll get into these later, but so just so you know, there's two kinds of assessments. So then you might want to be thinking about how would you assess the fact that your students have learned anything in your class or in your workshop or your presentation. What are going to be the measures that you're going to use? And what you want to assess goes back to your general objectives on the first page, your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 there, where you had the understand, 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 demonstrate, demonstrate, understand. Those are the things you're going to assess. So if you don't want to assess something, don't put it down there as your general objective, because you really aren't ever going to know if they learn that or not if you aren't in some way going to determine if they did or not. Right? So you could have 25 learning general objectives, but if you don't, that's really, you don't need that many. In other words, you should just try to match what you assess with what you're actually wanting to achieve as an objective. Just a general rule of thumb. Okay, so that is our syllabus for this class. And the next page, on page four, is a list of all the handouts. Now, I have to make two corrections. Okay, if you go back to page two, under assignments, if you go to number five, The rubric for scoring your syllabus is actually handout 9 and not 10. And under 6, the rubric for the handout is actually 4 and not 5. So I'll say that again. Under assignments, number 5, the handout is number 9, not 10. And on number 6, the handout is 4, not 5.
What about assignment 4?
Pardon?
Assignment 4, is that handout 9 also?
Where are you?
Assignment?
Yes, yes, yes it is. 4 is 9 and 5 is 9.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Now, in addition to the 10 pages that you the 10 handouts that you have, there's additional material that's not numbered by pages, and it was scanned in, and it's probably not as easy to read, but without having any blackboard or any place anything to post it on, the only way I could get it to you was to send it to you as a JPEG. So you should have, in addition to those 10 handouts, you should have 2 concept maps, which are papers with little squiggly circles all over them. There's an A and a B. A has less circles than B. B has lots of circles. Okay, then you should also have a pyramid, which shows the characteristics of adult learners. You should have 6 pages of instructional methodologies. And then you should have 1 page of learning styles and various activities that go with the learning styles. If you didn't get that part, then just you don't need it tonight. Just connect with Sol, and she'll make sure you get it. Okay, so that's that page 4. Okay, so now let's start. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is, for the next 5 minutes, I want you to take out a blank piece of paper, and in the middle of the piece of paper, create a circle or a box, and write the words, teaching strategies. Okay, and when you've done that, you can look on page 5 of the handouts, which will be handout number 1. Take a blank piece of paper, put teaching strategies in the middle in a box, and then go to page 5, handout 1. Okay, so if those of you who don't have it, I'll read it to you so you know what's on this handout. You have been given a sample of a concept map. That's the piece of paper with all the circles on it. Don't look at it necessarily. Just know that you have it. As you can see, the topic is placed in the center of the page, and the student has illustrated all their understanding related to this topic. Okay, you're going to create a concept map for the topic of teaching strategies. So you put teaching strategies in the center of the page, and you web all the information that you can think of about teaching strategies. So you're going to draw a line from your teaching strategies out, make a little circle, and write in that little circle anything you know about a teaching strategy. If you know something more connected to that circle, just create as many circles and connect them in any way you like to show what you know about teaching strategies. And it's okay if you don't know anything about teaching strategies. Just spend 5 minutes now putting in little circles anything you can think of that you know about how to teach. Are there any questions?
Does it matter if we don't have a page of circles all over it?
No.
Just make up
just
our own?
Create your own.
Okay.
You're not following a matrix. You're just creating your own matrix. You can go anywhere you want on the page, up or down, left or right. It doesn't matter. Just connect all the ideas that you know about teaching to one another. So we need to have some music playing or else the recording will go off. So Anita's going to provide some music for us, and at 8:30 my time, 7:30 your time, or 9:30 your time, we'll come back on the line.
The reason I have to put music on is because with our recording system, if something doesn't happen for 30 seconds, they think we're not there anymore. So this music isn't to help you think better. It's just to keep the line busy, okay?
It's not very loud. I don't think it's audible.
It's not supposed to be. It's not supposed to be.
It's supposed to be loud enough so the recording won't stop.
Oh, you don't think that's loud enough?
I hardly hear it.
Thank you.
hard to see if people are still writing, but do people need more time or are they finished?
I'm finished.
Okay,
finished.
Okay. So if you're finished, you can label it concept map number one and put it away until later in the class. And forget about it for now. And you did.
Map.
Concept map number one. Okay, now we're going to talk about selecting topics, because you're going to be selecting a topic that you're going to be creating your syllabus around. And in order to think about what you might want to talk about, you're going to do the same thing that you did with teaching strategies, only this time you're going to create another concept map that is actually based on your topic of choice. Okay, and so you're going to want to think about the scope and the sequence. So I just want to generally talk about those two concepts in terms of these two handouts, the A and the B handout with the circles all over. Some of you don't have this, so I'll try to describe it to you as best I can. There's an A and a B. The A was given at the beginning of the class on literacy, and the B was given at the end. And just as we just did this one on teaching strategies, that would be our A, and then there will be a B on teaching strategies later on another night. But if you have these two to compare, I'd like to look at them with you so we can see what this student has learned in the course of this class. If you notice, on the A, she's got written how I would teach literacy in my classroom in the center there, and then she has a number of lines going off with circles. If you look to the left, the first one off to the left says reading out loud. That's her first, what's called a node. So she put that one off to the left, and then off of reading out loud, she put chapter books. She put, I read to the students, and then it stopped. Then going down from reading out loud, she put picture books. Under that, she put maybe the something. I'm not sure what that says. And then she put, I read under picture books. And so she basically outlined what she understands about reading as best she could. And there are a number of chunks, and there are a number of nodes, and a number of strands that we're going to go through now and find some of these so you can know what they are. It doesn't really matter to me if you really master what a node is or a chunk is or a strand is, because those are tools. What matters is that you get you grasp the idea of how to use a concept map and that it becomes something effective for you to use. Now, you might say, well, why can't I just use an outline? Well, you could just use an outline, but sometimes you can think more holistically when you don't have to be thinking about what goes under what and what goes before what and so forth. You can just let your mind kind of just put down whatever comes to mind as it comes to your mind, and not necessarily in order. So if you look, I'll try to identify some of these things. If you look to the left, there's a node. I identified one node. Going down from how I would teach literacy in my classroom, if we take the line and follow it all the way down, there's a node called punctuation down towards the bottom that has a lot of things going off of it. That would be called a chunk. So the node would be punctuation, and off of the punctuation, she's got a lot of different circles, those are all together, those become a chunk. If we go back up to how I would teach literacy in my classroom and we follow the second to the left line going down, it hits alphabet, then it goes to sounds of the letters, and then it goes down to work in groups. That would be a strand because you can continue, take your finger and continue down a single line, go down through 1, 2, 3, 4 levels. And she could have actually kept going if she had put strategies as how to work in a group under that. She could have kept going. So strand is basically a line that connects dot circles and goes down as far as it would go. If you analyze her first page, she doesn't have a lot of depth. Her activities, there's not a lot of middle concepts, you know, between the topic and then the activity. She goes kind of right into some things. I don't want to get into that too much, but let's look at the second one on B. I don't want to confuse you. Okay, now here on B, this is the end of the class, and if we look at this and we compare these two, we can see that she has a lot more depth. So first, we would want to think about, are the concepts accurate, you know? And then does she have silos, or does she have actually a lot of interconnecting ideas? And we can see from this she has lots of interconnecting ideas. We might want to think about, is her language professional? Is she really using the right terms for these things? We might see how comprehensive it is. We might think about how much depth there is and how much breadth there is. The breadth is the scope. The depth is the sequence. She's got lots of depth. And think about how complex her knowledge is. And actually, if we look at this and analyze it in terms of literacy, her knowledge is not that complex. And we might see how many chunks there are and how many strands there are. If we look at the second one, B, and we follow how I would teach literacy in my classroom off to the right-hand corner of that box, if we follow it down, it goes down to writing, and then under writing, it goes down to whole writing, and then from whole writing, it goes across the paragraphs, it goes into punctuation, and it's a fairly decent strand, but we could actually go down, if we knew more, we could actually take that and continue it down. So that's how you analyze and assess, use a concept map to assess learning. But we'll talk about this more. What I want you to do is to work on using this to develop the ideas that you want to use in your syllabus, I mean in your class to create your syllabus. So let's say your topic was how to make your ascension. And that would be the center of your box, how to make your ascension. And then you might have, think about mastering the seven rays. And that could be just one strand. So under that mastering the seven rays, you might have the first ray, underneath the seven rays, the second ray, third ray, fourth ray, fifth ray, sixth ray, seventh ray, eighth ray. And underneath that you could have, you know, lines going off in all directions under each of those rays. And then you might get to the five secret rays, and then you might have more information of the five secret rays. That would be a very, very long strand, as I've just described it. And that would only be one strand under how to make your ascension. There are many, many ways that you can use this concept map. The topic can be very broad, the topic can be very narrow, but it should help you kind of just throw out your ideas. So tonight, or sometime between now and next week, you'll think about what topic you want to pick for the purpose of this class. And then you'll create for yourself a concept map and spend as much time as you can to try to flesh out the various ideas. It doesn't mean that you're going to teach everything on your concept map. No, the concept map is just a tool to help you get it all out in front of you, and then you're going to analyze it, and you're going to say, okay, I've got 25 topics here. Obviously, I can't teach 25 topics, so let's see. Shall I take a strand and teach just one aspect? Shall I compare some things? Shall I take something from my concept map and relate it to something else that's been taught by another, in another place, another idea, another theorist, another theory? Shall I, you know, see, there's various ways you can develop it. So what you're doing is just getting the information in front of you. Then you're going to have to determine how you're going to turn that all into a class. The first step is to get it all out there in front of you so you know everything you know. And then if you find a big hole, you think, oh, I don't know anything about the third ray. I know a lot about the first ray. I don't know anything about the third ray, so I better go out and do some research and find out more about the third ray. So then you might have to go out and find out some more information if you have big areas where there's nothing you can fill in, and yet you think you should be saying something about that. Okay, are there any questions at this point?
Les, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, which button do I push to mute?
Star 6. No questions? Okay, so
A question. Once we create this map, how are we going to send it to you?
You're not going to send it to me.
Oh, just
you're going to keep it.
Right.
It's yours. You're going to keep it.
Thank you.
Okay, if you look at page 6, here are the instructions that you're going to use to create your concept map. So if you look on page 6, handout 2, it says you will create a second concept map for the topic you have selected to prepare your syllabus on. And just what I've just said, you put the topic in the center and you create all the information that you know. And you're going to pay attention to the scope and the sequence for your syllabus, paying seeing where you have chunked information, where the strands are that run down through, and it's going to help you to get a whole big picture of what it is that you know about, what it is that you want to talk about. Okay? So I'll just wait a minute or two in case anybody wants to unmute and ask a question before we go on.
Phyllis, I have a question.
Yeah?
Hi. Is there a difference between mind mapping and concept mapping?
Well, yes and no. Concept mapping, you analyze the nodes and the strands and the chunks, and you try to determine from that what the person has actually got there, and so you can relate it into a number. You can assign numbers to things. We're going to get to that when we get to the rubric.
Okay.
Mind maps sometimes are just not meant to be, they're just what they are, mind maps.
Okay.
They're not used for assessment purposes. The concept is similar.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so after you've got your concept map finished, then you're going to think about what you could talk about on that concept map for 5 minutes. That's all the time you can have, unfortunately, because there's not enough time in this class and too many of you to give you a whole 20 minutes to give your whole talk. But you could have 5 minutes. So you're going to just look it over and pick any place, it doesn't really matter, on your concept map, and just pick out 5 minutes worth of information that you want to deliver to us, just to practice. That's what it's for, just to practice. And you can deliver it any way you like. It's a little difficult, though, when we're on the telephone to be doing hands-on things, but I'm not limiting that. So if there's a way you can get us to use paper and pencil and do something with that information, that's fine. So you're going to be thinking as you go along this week, okay, what can I talk about for 5 minutes? And pick out something for 5 minutes. And next week we'll ask for a couple people to share what they have done with their five minutes. Okay, so I'll ask you to say to yourself what the definition of these words are, just in your own mind, just to make sure you're clear on them. What is the definition of the scope? The scope of the topic is what?
Depth, complexity.
The scope of the topic, yep, refers to all of the information that is in that under that topic. And you can't, you know, for example, the scope of this class could be a year-long class, you know, meeting twice a week or, you know, three times a week. So that could be the scope of what we're learning in this four-night class. So obviously the scope for this class has been abbreviated. And you're going to have to abbreviate your scope, too, for what you know, because you may know a lot more than you could talk about in 6 nights of 1.5 hours each night. So after you do your concept map and you have it all out there, you're going to say, well, this is much too much for just one class. I could teach 5 classes. This is 5 classes worth of stuff. Or you could say, well, gee, I don't have hardly anything. I don't know if I could fill up an hour. I better go get some more information. This isn't very much. So the scope is somewhat arbitrary. In other words, information is infinite, but the scope refers to what you know about that topic and what you think you ought to be talking about when you talk about that topic. And then what is the sequence? So now tell yourself, what is the sequence? I hope you all told yourself the sequence is the sequence of ideas that I'm going to teach. Which idea first, which idea second, which idea third, which idea fourth. And you won't necessarily know that looking at your concept map. You're going to have to think about it and think, okay, I've got all this stuff now. I've got all these circles, and they're all going in all 10 different directions, and everything's linked up to everything else. And now, okay, what I'm going to start saying first and second, third, fourth, and fifth, and so forth. And this is the hardest part of teaching anything, is figuring out how wide your scope is going to be and what your sequence is going to be. That's the hardest part. Because, of course, you want to say everything, and you can't. You don't have time to say everything. So what is it that you think is the most important thing that you need to say in the amount of time that you've been given to talk? So to go back to A, and we'll do this again next week for those who don't have their sheets in front of them. To go back to sheet, if you go back to A, the concept map A, a node would be an initial first circle that comes off of the middle. Those first circles are called nodes, and then off the node come other things, and that whole grouping is called a chunk. And then a strand is a line that runs all the way down that has a number of circles off of it, and you can follow it as far down as you can. And then the cross links are lines that connect chunks or connect ideas in two different strands or in two different parts of the chart.
Celeste, I have a question about scope.
Yeah.
Is that all of the information total about the topic, or just all the information that you want to include about the topic?
So when you do your brainstorming, when you do your concept map, you try to get down as much as you know about that topic. But then the scope for your class is the actual extent of the information that you're going to include in your class.
Okay, so the scope is just what you want to include in the
right.
class.
But if you allow yourself just to go beyond that, you can make certain that, yes, what I'm picking is the essential thing. Why did I pick this and not that? Why, how do you know that if you don't know what the that's are all the time?
So concept map is sort of everything. Scope narrows it down a bit.
Yeah, well, your concept map will represent the scope of what you know about that topic when you're done.
Okay.
You look at that and you say, okay, I've only got this much time. And obviously, I've got stuff here that would take me much more time to talk about. So what is my scope actually going to be? If I looked at this literacy thing, I could say, okay, my scope is going to be punctuation. That's all I'm going to talk about. It's just punctuation. And I'm going to just develop all those ideas that I have down there under punctuation.
So you figure out your scope after looking at the concept map and seeing everything, then you narrow it down with
yeah.
the scope.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the sequence is then going to be shorter.
Right, so now I'm going to teach punctuation. So, okay, am I going to start with capital letters? I'm going to start with question marks? I'm going to start with periods and sentences? Where am I going to start? I've got all these little circles here. What am I going to teach first, second, third, fourth, and fifth?
All right.
That's
Thanks.
The way you do that. Any other questions? That was a good one. Okay, so then, yeah?
Can you cover thread one more time, please?
Say it again.
Thread.
Which word?
Thread.
Red?
Oh, thread.
Thread.
Oh, a thread. Okay, the strands, you mean?
Strands, I'm sorry, thank you.
Yeah, the strands are the lines that run down, like, that go all the way down, like from top of the page to the bottom of the page and have circles off of them. And a really well-developed concept map will have very long strands, and generally the less people know about something, there will be shorter strands. But if you look at A, I think her longest strand would be the one going down to maybe punctuation, goes down to periods and end sentences. She has about three things there. You can't really find any strands that are longer than about three things. Okay, but if you look at her B, at the B, you can find the strand that goes off the right-hand box, goes down to writing, and it goes down to whole writing, it goes across the paragraphs, goes over to the left to grammar, goes down to punctuation. That's a longer strand. So that's just, if I was analyzing this as a teacher, I would say, okay, this is more developed understanding because the strands are getting longer. I think when you do your own, you'll realize that. You'll see that, I think.
You said there was another one. I thought it was threads. There was strands, and what else is a connection?
No, there's cross. There's
cross.
Yeah, there's the cross links. Those are the ones that go across between the circles. For example, on A, if you look kind of in the middle, there's one that says learn to spell name, and then there's a line that's connects that one over to the left that says repeat each day with younger students. Those line that crosses over across strands, that's a cross link.
Thank you.
A question there on that handout 2 where you talk about cross links. It says lines that connect node loads within within and across chunks, levels, and strands. I don't think you defined levels.
Okay. Well, the levels are the minor topics under the major topics. And so let's see if I can find one in the second sheet. So she has how I would teach literacy, and then she's got one going up off to the top that says guided reading. That's a node. And then off of that, she's got it connected during engagement. Then she's got a line across and over to engagement. And then out of engagement, she's got read aloud, picture books, chop books, word wall, and there's that information down there. You could say that, not a great example, but you could say that the read aloud, the chop books, the word wall, and the picture books come under engagement, but you could also say they came under something else besides engagement. So, but in her case, she's using that word engagement. So that's her. That's like her second level. So under guided reading, she has engagement. Under engagement, she has all these other exemplars of that. So that would be a level. So guided reading would be the top level. Then the next level would be engagement. Then the next level down would be read aloud and chop books.
Okay.
You mentioned the word silos. What is that?
That's chapter books. Yeah, silos. Silos are like, if we don't really have a good silo here, but a silo would be like if you had a box in the middle and then you had four lines going out, and under each of those lines going out you had a circle. Under each circle you had like maybe two or three things going down the page. They would be like silos. In other words, none of those ideas are connecting with any of the other ideas. So let's just say we had... our topic was the seven rays. We put the seven rays in the middle of the page, and then we had seven lines coming off the seven rays, one circle for each of the rays, and under the first ray we listed the qualities, second ray, so forth, but we didn't show any relationship between any of the rays to any of the other rays, and that would be like a silo.
So it would be an isolated strand, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Right. You're all very good at this. Tell from your questions you're getting it. Okay, so that'll be it for this part tonight. And now Anita's going to share with us the spiritual preparation of the teacher.
Oh, I guess I better be unmuted. Hello, everyone. We have a nice big class here. When Celeste asked me to speak to you about the spiritual preparation of the teacher, being a Montessorian, I immediately thought of the title of one of the chapters in one of my favorite books, her book, Maria Montessori, The Child in the Church. And so she has a chapter called The Spiritual Preparation of the Teacher. So naturally I went there to review that chapter, which I have read many times. So I will share with you just a few major points from that book, from Maria Montessori, as well as four other Ascended Masters. So when speaking of scope and sequence, we could have a very, very long session on this, but we have a half hour, so I have chosen four other Ascended Masters to share some concepts that they've given. So other than Maria Montessori, also something from Dr. Elizabeth Gaspari, now the Ascended Lady Master Elizabeth, and Archangel Jophiel, and Lord Maitreya and Gautama Buddha. So these are some of our great teachers, and it's make a concept map on this. We would take every Ascended Master we've ever known and every great teacher and mentor we've ever had, and we could put them in it, and we'd have a very big piece of paper with the ideas we get from each one. But this is kind of a sample, and I'm sure you would all have many things that you would add. So I'll begin with Maria Montessori.
This line is now muted.
And teacher training, first of all, is know thyself. And she goes further and asks us to improve thyself. Know thyself, of course, comes from the Greeks. Some say from Hermes Trismegistus, some from the oracles. Some say it was Plato got it from Socrates, but it's an important concept in being a teacher, to know yourself. And as Montessori says, we need to improve. So it is character development of the teacher that is the first step. So we're backing away from all the things we know and thinking about the students that we'll be teaching, but just coming right back to ourselves. And Montessori, being a fervent Catholic early in her life, her books are written with stories and illustrations coming from the life of Christ and things, you know, words that Jesus gave. And so her admonishment is from Jesus, saying, first take the beam that is in your own eye, then look for the mote that is in the eye, and I'll say, of your student. So a habit that teachers seem to have is to often look instead for the lacks in our students. What do they not know? What should I do for them? But what we're saying is we need to look at ourselves first, way before we approach another person and to attempt to assist them, that we need to know ourselves. It doesn't mean we need to be perfect, but we need to know ourselves. Montessori pointed out two of the seven deadly sins, and she called them cardinal sins of teachers, and two cardinal sins that teachers are prone to fall into, and that is pride and anger. And she said they go together. So we need to be aware of these, and this is what, well, and then she says that they are two sides of the same coin, and that their opposites, humility and compassion, is the aim of the teacher, to develop those virtues. So I'm going to just read just a little bit from The Child and the Turd. This is page 50. And I'm not sure, this book may be out of print now, but sometimes we find them in used bookstores. So if you ever see any Montessori book in a, you know, pick it up. Okay, this is what she says. What our method asks of a teacher as preparation, that she should examine herself and purge herself of the defect of tyranny, eradicating the ancient mixture of pride and anger with which her heart is unconsciously encrusted. So that's quite something, isn't it? Sounds awful, right? So it's an ancient mixture, and so that immediately when I read that, to eradicate the ancient mixture of pride and anger, that probably takes us right back to the fall, right back to Adam and Eve, to think about that, the pride and anger that may be part of why we left the garden, and this is our opportunity. And it's unconsciously encrusted. It's not that we want to have pride or want to have anger, but it is just there. She says so I'll go back to her quote. She says, we must cast off pride and anger, first of all, become humble. She must cast off pride and anger, first of all, and become humble before she can put on charity. That is a state of mind which she must obtain. This is the central point of equilibrium, without which it is impossible to advance. Now that's really an important concept, that this is a central point of equilibrium. And equilibrium, I think of the middle way first, and then weakening, however you'd want to say that. So this central point of equilibrium, she says, this is the inward preparation, the point of departure and arrival. This is the inward preparation of the teacher, the point of departure and the point of arrival. That's really interesting to meditate on that. It's the beginning, it's the ending. And having looked at the class list, I know many of you have probably have listened to the stories I've been telling, the biography stories of Gautama Buddha, and so many of the points that I've been teaching, as well as the short meditation class last weekend in Bozeman, speak to this very part, that there's a point of, so gave his first sermon of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, that was a point of departure, but it's also the point of arrival. It's the beginning and the end. So this is what Montessori is saying. Does anybody have anything you would want to? You're very welcome to and make comments at the.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Oh, you just.
I just came on.
Okay. All right. So we're and if right now we're talking about the spiritual preparation of the teacher.
Okay.
Does anybody have anything that they would want to or say that we've talked about so far?
Anita?
Yeah.
Patricia, do you want? I just wanted to ask, you said the opposite side of pride and anger are what and what?
Okay, of pride would be humility. And anger, pride and humility are pretty commonly accepted as opposites of each other. That's pretty easy. Now, anger, there's a lot of different opinions about what the other side of anger may be. And I like to think of it as kindness. What Montessori said in one of her books, that it is patience. Now, sometimes patience to me is long-suffering. You're just suffering through something, and even though you're not very happy about it. But I would say if it would be patience, it would be patience that is born of true understanding. And so what she said here in this book, she said the opposite is compassion. So it's compassion or kindness. It's a patience and compassion. So you can figure out your own word because. But those two go together quite a bit.
Thank you.
Sure. Then Montessori goes on to give a very important teaching on how to go about this task of destroying evil within ourselves, within our character, and encouraging virtue in ourselves. And in those where she says, this is the very end of her chapter, she says, the sudden extermination of evil is not a thing to be recommended. This is clearly taught by our divine master. It is better to let tares also grow than to destroy the good grain along with them. The key to the problem is, therefore, not to destroy evil, but to cultivate good. The key to the problem is, therefore, not to destroy evil, but to cultivate the good. Before she said that, she gave a very long explanation about growing wheat and how you just can't pull up all the weeds right away. You might pull up the grain, and of course that's part of one of Jesus' stories about the good grain. And so in my experience in my life, I found that anything you need to know about life, you can learn in a garden. And growing things. You learn a lot about weeds and what to do about them. So the key, she says, is to not destroy evil, but to cultivate good. And so in really thinking about that today, I was really seeing, one thing I wanted to mention is that where I live in Livingston is a town filled with trains, and I live fairly close to them, so once in a while you may hear a whistle, and I don't know how to get around that, so just enjoy it. I'll just warn you. Okay, so what I was going to say about the cultivating of good, I see this as a very important part of the mission of Meru University personally, that through Ascended Master Education, that's what we can do, is to help cultivate what is good, and that the weeds simply will not thrive in this healthy garden, this garden of life. Now, we have our judgment calls and our violet flame and our ruby ray and all of the tools that we have from the Ascended Masters that are all valid and important to use. But again, we want to seek the point of equilibrium, the point of balance, the middle way, where yes, we do use these tools. And so if we were to make a concept map, now this is just for me, I'm not representing the council or Celeste or anyone else, this is for me. But if I were to make a concept map about the heart center, for example, and all of the different departments or the different teams and the committees and the different functions, and I see Mayer University, and I see, oh, what a beautiful opportunity that is for us to help develop what's good, and through education to be that sunshine, that shining light that is giving out what's good, and where other parts of our service and our spiritual practice is the violet flame, the judgment, and all those things. But so anyway, that's just, I see Mayer University and just that yellow sunshine coming through, and so there it is, the yellow ray, and it's sunshine, and it's just, it's glorious, and our garden thrives with sunshine. So there we are. Other themes that Other themes of Montessori teacher training are that, so I have three things. So how could I boil down with the huge scope of Montessori education, and I've been a Montessorian for, you know, going on 3 decades and have been doing teacher training forever. And so what I tried to do for this class tonight was to look at everything I know about it and what can I just bring down into three, to bring the scope into the spiritual preparation of the teacher, and so what three things can I say about that that could be meaningful to you. So the three things, other than what I just read from Montessori's Child in the Church, these other ones, other themes, one of them is that we need to observe and not judge our students in order to determine how we can help them. So in judging, then we would be assessing, what Celeste just done is ask the student to assess for herself, for himself, what do they know. Celeste didn't say, okay, I want to figure out what you know and what you don't know, and then I'll let you know what you need to do. She is asking you, and so Sol said, so do we send it in to you? She said, no, don't send it to me. That's for you. And so that's your opportunity to assess your own self. So what can we do? We can have an idea of what we can do to support your development. So to support your development as a teacher, what is it that I can do to help you? And so since you are all individuals, how do I help this one? How do I help that one? And so we do need to have some written work coming in from you so we can help with that. So as teachers, we don't consider ourselves to be the high and mighty teachers. We're rather, I think of myself as a humble assistant who is assisting each individual student and to assist each individual student's real teacher, which is the inner teacher, which of course is the Holy Christ Buddha self, because that is your real teacher, and your own students that you will be assisting have their own Holy Christ Buddha self that is their real teacher. You're not really their teacher. You're assisting their teacher. And you can assist them best by knowing yourself and having a clear understanding of yourself and what you can do, and then observing them and finding ways that you can assist them in their path. And in the story, the story told last week, that's what Gautama said, that he saw himself as walking brother with brother, walking the path with not being the teacher that knew everything, but just assessing them. Okay, so that's Montessori number one, observe and not be busy judging our students, but to observe them and see what can we do to support them. Number two is Montessori said that our students will teach us so much if we are quiet enough to listen. So that is a great joy to find that our students, what we can learn from our students, even if they're tiny ones or very, very elder ones. But she said we need to be quiet enough to listen. We need to be quiet enough to listen, to observe, to with our senses take in what we see, and we learn from that. The third one that I chose is the great gift of being a teacher is that while we are assisting the development of others, we are also developing. So it's a mutual developmental process. It's our students are developing, and we are developing, and it's a mutual, it's not I've already learned all this, so now I'm going to teach it to you. Open up your brain. I'm going to pour it in. It is, so if we're teaching the seven rays, as has been our example tonight, what can we do to help, how much we will also be developing our understanding of this, especially because we've gone out and researched and realized we didn't know so much about the third ray, and so we go out and learn it. And so look how much we develop. So what blesses one blesses all. And so to me, that's a true test of something's worthwhile if it is blessing one and all. Any comments or personal observations or anything you want to say about that? That's the end of what I was going to say about Maria Montessori tonight.
Was there a fourth one, Anita?
Well, actually, there was the first. Well, no, there was just three I gave here. But before that, I read from the child in the church, and so there were several points within that. There's just so many that I could give, but these are the ones that just felt like that I want to mention.
That I heard you say.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, the second one that I would mention tonight, the second Ascended Master, would be Lady Elizabeth, who's probably the best friend I ever had on the planet, who was walking the planet with me. And she gave many, many lessons that I shall never forget. I was with her day and night for the last 10 years of her life, and then prior to that, years before that, I was with her also. But the one I'll share tonight was, and that was the last time that she sat in class with me when I was giving a teacher training class. She had not. She used to come to every single class and be very active in all of it. But then in the later years, she would come once in a while, and I would load her in the car and bring her to a class, and she would come here and there. But in the last class that she attended at all was in the winter and spring of 2001, which was a year before she passed away. She passed away summer of 2002. And she only came to one class out of that entire course. And she really, I just wondered if maybe I shouldn't have brought her because she looked like she wasn't really with us. She was kind of nodding off or just didn't seem to really be totally paying attention. I was giving a wonderful lecture on diphthongs and digraphs, which isn't actually that interesting. But we were in the midst of kind of the advanced phonics in our language area. So I was talking about these things, and she didn't seem to be paying much attention. And then suddenly, kind of with a jolt, she just looked up, and with her long finger pointing in the air, she said, "It is not what you do. It's not what you say. It's what you are. And you have to change." And she said it with a lot of power. "It's not what you do. It's not what you say. It's what you are. And you have to change." Well, it was a little bit of a shock to some of the students. And she repeated that later during the course of the day, she would say that again in those exact same words. And then she talked about it somewhat, and she said that our students quickly assess who we are, and we can't hide our consciousness from them. And the only way out is to be constantly improving ourselves. And every day we're improved from the day before. That's the only way out, because, and it's not that we what I said earlier is that we're not judging our students. We're not judging ourselves either. We're assessing, we're being mindful of ourselves, of where we are. And each day we want to be farther along the path, upward and onward. And so she says that's the only way out, to just constantly improve. And guess what? Teaching will help us do that. It's just how it works. It's just wonderful. So let's say that, even though you're muted, or if you're not, it's fine, but let's say that together. It's not what you do. It's not what you say. It's what you are, and you have to change. Okay. Now, her motto, as many of you know, is love is the key. And if we truly love truly love what we're doing and our students and the great teaching that we are privileged to give, then we will be eager to change, because we want to be the best examples we can be to our students. So particularly with this, if I'm teaching diphthongs and digraphs, that's not terribly inspiring. But when we're teaching Ascended Master teaching, I mean, that's probably the most boring part of the whole course I give. You know, that's the worst day. But when we're teaching the teachings,
this line is now unmuted.
Us. They're looking us over. They're seeing us.
This line is now muted.
And there's no detail that they miss. At least, as from my experience, when I've sat in a class with someone who's teaching me, giving their teaching and their witness, then I'm not thinking so much about what they're doing and saying, but who are they? Who is this person? Is this someone worthy to listen to? Is this an example that I would follow? So there we have it. We do have to change, and we do change every day. So that's a Lady Elizabeth. Any comments on that? Some of you have sat in her classes. Is that Kathleen, too? Are you on the line? I think she is. Kathleen was in the very first class I gave with Elizabeth Kaspari back in 1990, I don't know, 4-1 something. All right, the third one that I mentioned was Archangel Jophiel. Well, it's actually a dictation from Archangels Jophiel and Uriel. And that, I would love to have sent that out to you, but I probably couldn't, but you could probably look it up yourself, and I'm going to give you the reference. This is Archangels Jophiel and Uriel together, Volume 28, Pearls of Wisdom, Volume 28, Number 5. Volume 28, Number 5, February 3rd, 1985. And the date of the dictation given was December 31, 1984, at the New Year's Conference at Camelot, December 31, 1984. And so there's just a short excerpt on teachers. And these archangels say, qualify yourselves to receive the mantle of world teachers. And they say, understand that you are qualified if you qualify yourselves. And they're saying that we should take a series of dictation or books or tapes and study them and learn and read, take notes, go over the information, repeat it, speak it to everyone you meet, and you're ready. And it says here, you see, you fail to become teachers because you think you must know all that the sages know, but you have forgotten. The requirement is a single cup of cold water in Christ's name. The single cup of cold water. So you fill out your concept map, you find something that you really are ready to share, and you don't have to know everything about everything in order to be ready. So these archangels go on to talk about this process, and then they say that the truth must be shared. The truth that is so simple yet so powerful in your life must be shared. And when I say must, I speak of the mandate of karma. And I bring to you the knowledge of the karma of the second ray of illumination. Those who are illumined, who do not pass their test on illumination in a consecrated, orderly, understandable manner, with good hearts and gentleness, begin to be burdened by the karma of neglect, the karma of blocking of the flow. So what Celeste talked about tonight in the orderly, understandable manner, that's why we're giving this class, so we can learn how that is done. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. It has been studied a lot, and so she, as she said, does this day in and day out, and with good hearts and gentleness. So here we have our Ascended Masters coming in to help us with that part. And then the end of this pearl, which is about 3 pages, but I'm going to read the very last part. From time to time, you have heard from your teachers the emphasis on education as a deterrent to world darkness. And we have mentioned that those who give the violet flame and the calls for protection would do well to teach many the law. For then their own duties would lessen and mankind would misqualify less energy and therefore require less maintenance. See, it's enlightened self-interest. The more we teach, the more education there is, the less we have to clean up, right? Okay, now here's the last paragraph. We must do more than maintain a planet. We must create and carve out of individuality enlightened sons and daughters of God who will cease the misqualification of God's law and energy and become instantaneously, by knowledge, by the Logos, and by the conversion, trumpeters for God, leaders in battle, representatives of all issues, ready to tackle the conglomerates of conspiracy that have conspired to keep the most amazing truth, the most amazing power of healing, the most amazing path of Christhood from the people of this planet. So it would be worth your while to look up on your CD or whatever resources you have this wonderful teaching on being a teacher from these archangels. And I think that this is similar to Montessori saying we don't need to pull up all the evil in the world. We just we sow the good wheat. We nurture. We cultivate what is good. And then we don't have so much cleanup work to do. All right. Lord Maitreya next. Lord Maitreya, okay, just from right now today. And so if I take his wonderful dictation, so beautiful, and thank you so much, David, for getting this out to us in our hands immediately. That was just magnificent, whoever transcribed this and got it out. So I thought, okay, what are the three things from this that I would want to mention? So you may have it in your hand, and you may have three different things, but the three things I thought are these. One, he's saying that each of us has something to offer. Now, each of us that have come this far in the path certainly have something to offer, and we have had it for a long time, and many of you have been teaching. So each has something to offer. And he said that we need to know our students. We need to know them so we can respond to them where they are. Okay, so know our students. And the third one, we need to bond together, work together in harmony to build and move forward. So this isn't just, even though, yes, we may be out there at some bookstore somewhere all by ourselves teaching, but this is a holy bond of us with each other, working together to build this great opportunity that we have, this secret way activity. So I really give great gratitude to Lord Maitreya and David to bringing this to us today. And the last one that I would mention is Gautama Buddha. And I guess the theme I would say from everything I've learned from him is mindfulness. Mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. The mind is full. Jophiel says, know your material. Maitreya says, know your students. Gautama says, know yourself. So we come full circle right back to Montessori. Know yourself. Improve yourself. Okay. I see Montessori as the teaching of, I mean, it's just such a mother teaching, and so I just see the wholeness of the Buddha and the mother. And so how do we gain that knowing of ourselves? And I would suggest through meditation, through mindfulness training, observing your body, observing your thoughts, meditate on your breath. We won't be doing a meditation tonight, but that's something that you do on your own, of course. But meditate on your breath. Don't try to go somewhere. Just ground it right where you are and stay in your body. Open your eyes sometimes. Be aware of your thoughts. Be in the world and not of it. Practice, practice, practice. But knowing yourself. Mindfulness brings, according to Gautama's teachings and the Buddhist teachings, that this mindfulness brings compassion because we come to know ourselves better. We come to know our own bodies better and our own thoughts better. And knowing that we share, all the humans on this planet have physical bodies, and we share that with them. And we're breathing, they're breathing. It's all the same. We're all the same. And none of us have ever had a thought that someone else didn't also have. So we share our bodies, shared, our thoughts are shared. So the more we come to understand ourselves and have compassion for ourselves where we are, the more we can have that for others and for our students. And accepting ourselves. We can accept ourselves and know our thoughts and not try to run away from them, but know them and then we can be more accepting of others and where they are. We start to lose the absurd attachment to our own bodies and have more compassion. So the two things I want to mention about Gautama's teaching are, one, that mindfulness that, in my opinion, comes through meditation, and then the second one is the 8 characteristics of the teacher. Now, that was given on Sunday, the Bozeman class. And those of you that didn't, I'm just going to mention those. He said that in order to be qualified to be a teacher or a missionary, that we need 8 things. We need to be able to hear, to make others listen. So those are kind of pairs. We need to be able to hear others, and we need to be able to make them listen to us. And then the next pair is to be able to learn. So we need to be able to learn and to remember. Contemplation. Then the last two, good social skills. And the other one is the 8th one, but it kind of is goes right along with the 7th one. It says, don't cause quarrels. And so isn't that important? To have good social skills, know how to be with people, to help people feel comfortable to be with us, to bring peace, joy, happiness. Very simple. But it takes mindfulness, and it takes some work. So in conclusion, I just want to share a teaching that I received this morning in my meditation that gave me some clarity that I just didn't know I was looking for, but it came very clear to me, and I just like to share it with you. It gave me clarity on the meaning of what Jesus said in John chapter 15 in the New Testament. John chapter 15, verse 13 is, Jesus said, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. So the teaching that I received this morning in my meditation was that what that means for me today, as that for me a teacher, this means that all that I have learned and experienced in my life, all that I have sacrificed and suffered, all that I have overcome and become, all which I am in this very moment is offered to you as my student. So this one who I really am right now am here to help you and to support your own development in helping you to become more of who you are through the purposes of this class. And so I'm offering myself as a living sacrifice of who I am. So if I'm this laying down the life for the friend is I'm laying down my life. And so my life is everything that has happened to me in my life and everything that's who I am right now. So what it was yesterday, today hopefully it's more, and tomorrow it will be more again. So this is what you will do as a teacher. You will offer yourself who you are in that exact moment that you're teaching. That's why I can't write something 6 months in advance and then teach it the same way, because I'm a different person 6 months later, and so I have something a different way to teach. So that is the conclusion of my comments on the spiritual development of the teacher, and hope that it has been helpful to you.
Thank you, Anita. That was truly beautiful.
This line is now unmuted.
Can he hear me? Did you mute? Hello, can anyone hear me?
Yes. I can hear. Celeste?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to dwell on your thoughts, Anita, but I also want to conclude tonight. So I just wanted to throw out one more thing. When you're thinking about your topic, this is something that Mother taught me. I think one of the most important things that Mother taught us was that whenever you teach, about whatever you teach about, if you are become mindful of that topic, you will probably tune into the records of the perversion of that topic. And one of the wonderful gifts that Mother gave to us was the ability to show us where things had gone off the track, or where the teachings had been slightly perverted, or something that was incomplete in a teaching, or, you know, but so the records will come up, and that's your opportunity as a teacher to always handle those records, because not only do your students have records, but then the topic that you're teaching also has its records. And so that's a great challenge for all of us. So become mindful of that this week and see if you can tune into what would be the opposition to that topic that you have going to select now to bring forth, and then include that in your calls, and maybe you can also help clean up some yellow ray energies on the planet that have been perverted.
I could use a little clarity on that one, Celeste.
Okay, so for example, this is a true teaching. I was on the top of that sun tower in Mexico with the group that went to Mexico, and there was the records of human sacrifice were there. And I was meditating on the concept of human sacrifice. I realized that the sacrifice, the true teaching of that blood ritual is the giving. It's just as Anita had just said, laying down the light. You shed your blood and you give of your essence of your light that's in your aura and in your chakras. You give the essence of that light out, and that is the sacrifice, the true sacrifice. And that this other was the total perversion of that. So let's say I was going to be talking about what it truly means to become a world teacher and to lay down my life and to sacrifice the light of my chakras and share my attainment. Then the record of that perversion of that, which is giving the blood in place of the light in the blood that flows through the blood, that whole perversion of that teaching would be there for me to transmute, because I am now going to be talking about the way that the masters would talk about it, which is that you're giving of your essence of your light, not you're giving blood from your body. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Celeste?
Yeah.
I've also heard the teaching, which I thought was so profound, and to me it was that the sacrifices are actually symbolic of getting rid of the human within us for the divine, sacrificing the animal.
Yeah, we can look at it that way too, but I don't want to get off in the discussion of the sacrifice. But for me, at that moment on the top of that peak, that's where I was with that. So, and the mother would always bring up the records that came along with all the various teachings. So that's what I'm trying to get at. And some of those, and that's a wide scope.
If I could finish asking that question, though,
yeah, sure.
I have clarification. Would that come as some kind of a feeling, or a discernment, or how would you know what the record was?
Well, that's where you become mindful. If you become quiet and you meditate and ask, Lanto to overshadow you and to help you with that, or help mm-hmm. ask Maitri to help you with that, or mm-hmm. any master that you normally communicate with, I know the master will give that to you, and you'll just tune into it. It'll just be there. So anyway, as you go out to speak, the dweller of that, the perversion of that, whatever it is, that ascended master message, that light message, that word or truth, capital T, always there's a dweller that opposes that message. So as you prepare now your topic, you'll hear the rumblings. It'll be there. It'll
then
come.
I can have experienced that in general terms, where before any presentation, I feel like I'd rather do anything than that. And you can feel just the opposition to it.
Yeah.
But as far as a very specific understanding of the posing record, that's kind of an interesting concept. Yeah.
Well, we'll just see how we do.
Yeah.
So we're past our time, so we're going to end tonight. So Anita, would you like to make an invocation?
Celeste, before you finish, before the
sure.
closing invocation,
oh, yes,
may
that's
I
right.
talk about
mm-hmm.
a housekeeping
yeah,
item?
Do.
Some of those students who are there, because I gave the telephone number to a lot of people, but who have not registered, please register on the web. It's
yes,
on the homepage, and we have a lot of people who have not registered, and Donald is not registered at all. I'll call you after the class, Donald.
So what we're going to do is we're going to have a different phone number for the rest of this class. So those of you that are registered will receive that other phone number, and we'll continue with a different phone number. So please be alert to that email from Soul with the new number.
Left?
Yeah.
Is there any assignments for this week?
Yes. Can somebody help? Who is this?
Michael Arnett.
Michael, can somebody help Michael with the assignment?
I would need it also.
Do you have a packet, Michael?
It just came in.
Oh, you just came in. Okay. Well, if you get your packet, you'll see in your packet what your assignment is, but basically you're going to be creating a syllabus.
Okay.
You're going to be creating a concept map and figuring out what you're going to talk about in your class.
Okay.
Well, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I was not able to open the JPEG file and get those samples. Is there some way that I can get those so that I can see what they look like?
Is this
Sol has another. We did it in another format, and so Sol can send it to you again if you email her.
Okay. Cheryl?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll talk to you afterwards.
Okay.
Because I thought you were able to open it, but maybe.
Oh,
okay.
I was able to open it, but it's not in that group of everything.
Okay. I will.
So any questions, contact Soul. Thank you, everybody. It was wonderful. I'm so excited. I'm just so grateful that we have this opportunity, and I know the Masters will be working closely this week. And have a good time, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you.
Anita, would you like to seal us?
In the name of my mighty I Am Presence and Holy Christ Buddha Self, in the mighty I Am Presence and Holy Christ Buddha Self of each of our students and teachers and staff, heart friends, light bearers everywhere upon this planet, and all masters, angels, Elohim, elementals, in this mighty mastermind alliance, help us do our work this week so that we can truly understand the plan and be part of that plan in beautiful joy and harmony together. We are eternally grateful. Let's say together, Hero Universe.
Hear, O universe, I am grateful.
Hear,
O universe, I am grateful.
Hear,
O universe,
I am grateful. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.